Good afternoon. This is our seventh class in the series Eretz Yisrael, the Talmud, and Rav Kook, the Shir HaShvi'i. Today we are looking at a Gemara in Brachot, Daf Mem Dalad Amud Aleph. And it's always interesting to see how, in the Talmud, how it goes from one subject to the other subject, and how it moves around from idea to idea.
Yeah.
So what the Talmud is discussing there is the concept of Ikar and Tafel. Ikar and Tafel means that when you are eating foods, if you're eating food, if it's one food, even if it's a combination of many things, you're only supposed to make one bracha. So, for example, If someone's eating a cookie, and in the cookie there is chocolate and other things, you don't make a separate bracha on the cookie and on the chocolate. The cookie is the ikar, it's the primary thing that you're eating. The other things are only there for flavor. And so therefore you don't make a separate bracha on the chocolate that's in the chocolate chips in the cookie. Right? That's a pretty straightforward, basic halacha. It's the ikar that you make a bracha. However, there's one exception. The exception is with bread. Bread doesn't just cover the food that's mixed in, but if you begin a su'udah, you begin a meal with bread, and you make hamotzi, it covers everything. You don't have to make any new brachot for the rest of the meal, because the bread is the ikar, not just for the foods that are mixed into it, but the bread becomes the ikar for the entire meal.
But for example, if you eat a new fruit at the end, do you need to say that you have ever eaten? Then you have to say Shechianu.
But Shechianu is not a bracha on food. Right? Shechianu is a bracha on celebration. You make a Shechianu for new clothing. You can make Shechianu for a new house, right?
Yeah.
So that's not a bracha on food. Yeah. So the hamotzi doesn't cover, you know, your brachot on that are not food related brachot. Right? But in terms of making a new shahakol or a new mezonot or borei pri ha'etz, you don't make that during the meal. Now there are those who do make a bracha on dessert. But that's going to be related to what we're going to talk about here, is that there are some people who don't consider that to be part of the meal. I don't know why people think that the desserts would not be part of their meal, but that's an approach. Anyway, now, but because bread is seen as the primary food, the ikar, so generally speaking, if you're eating bread and another food, you're only going to make the bracha on the bread and not on the other food. However, there's an exception. The exception is, if I don't want to eat bread, I don't want to eat bread. I want to eat a food, but the food is very salty. Very salty. And the only way that I can eat this food is if I eat a little bit of bread with it to soften and dampen the saltiness of the other food. So then that's the exception where the other food becomes the ikar and the bread becomes the tafel. So let me give an example. If let's say someone doesn't like crackers, they don't want crackers, they want to eat herring. But eating herring by itself is not easy. Number one, it could be very fishy or very salty in flavor, but also it's very oily. So I don't want to hold it with my hand. So I put it, I use a fork and I put it on top of a cracker. So if I want to eat the cracker, then I may have to make a bracha on the cracker. But if I only am using the cracker as a way of being able to eat the herring, then you make a shehakol niyabed varo bracha on the herring. And on the cracker, you wouldn't make a bracha at all. Now, we don't really do this because most people like the crackers too. But if in theory, if you didn't want the cracker, then you would not make a bracha even if you're eating it, because it's covered by the herring. That's the example. So let's read the Mishnah. Heviu lefanav meliach techila. If you brought someone, they brought to the table salty food, upat imo, and bread, the word for bread in Aramaic is pat, related to the word pita.
Right?
Right? So mavarech al hameliach, you only make a bracha on the salty food, upoter et hapat, and it covers, that bracha covers the bread. Shehapat tfeilalo, because the bread is secondary to it. Zeaklal, this is the rule. Kol shehu ikar, v'imo tfeila, if you have two foods, one is the primary food and one is the secondary food, mevarech al ha'ikar, you only make a bracha on primary food, upoter at tfeila, and it covers the secondary food. Now, this is it's a general rule. The details of this are very complicated, and we're not going into the halachot of the brachot here. This is all just... So, asks the Gemara a question. Umi ika midi, how would you ever have an example that have a meliach ikar where the salty food is the primary food, upat tefela, and the bread should become secondary? Answers the Gemara, Amar Rav Acha b'reid Rav Avira, Amar Rav Ashi, Rav Acha the son of Rav Avira said in the name of Rav Ashi, ba'ochlei perot ginosar shanu. This is referring to the people who ate the fruits of ginosar. Ginosar are the fruits that grow around the Yam Kineret.
Yes, that is
right. Ginosar. Right. Is it called ginosar? Right. So that's named after this line in the Talmud. So those fruits are so sweet, so to speak, as we'll see, that they would eat other foods just to make it easier to handle those foods. So there you have an example of where something is the ikar, and the bread becomes the tafel, becomes secondary. So now, because the Gemara is giving us an example of these foods near the Kinneret, by the Sea of Tiberias, by Tveria, that are so sweet, as we'll see. So the Talmud now shifts into a discussion about these fruits. Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chana, said Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Ki hava azlinam batrei de Rabbi Yochanan, when we were going behind Rabbi Yochanan, lemechal perot ginosar, we were going to eat the fruits of ginosar. Ki avinam beimea, when there were 100 students, menaktinen lechalchad v'chad asara asara, each of us would hold 10 fruits. V'chi avinam beasara, when there were 10 of us, menaktinen lechalchad v'chad mea mea, each of us would hold 100 fruits. So basically, they brought with them 1,000 fruits. V'chal mea minayu, each 100 fruits, have a machzik luhutzana bartlasa savei, required a basket that could hold 3 saw. That's how large these fruits were. Va'achiluhu, and we would eat the fruits. Umishtabea, and we could swear, the lotayim ziyuna, that we did not taste any level of satisfaction. Meaning, Has anyone ever tried eating one chocolate chip? One chocolate chip.
No, we always eat a couple.
Right? Why?
Because one is too little.
Why? It tastes the same. Right? Because when you get a little taste of something, if you have one chocolate chip, it will make you hungrier.
You want more.
You want more. So you need more. Right? So he's saying, we ate 1,000 of these, and we felt like we ate one chocolate chip. It was so good and so sweet and so, right? So mishtabed lo time ziyuna, says the Gemara, ziyuna salkadaitach, what do you think, they felt nothing? Ele'ema mezona, it means that we didn't feel sated. Tells us the Talmud, Rabbi Avahu Achil, he would eat of the fruits of Eretz Yisrael, of the Ginosar, ad habisharik le dudva miaputei, until the flies slipped off his forehead. It means that he ate so much fruit that oil started to come out of his skin, and the flies would slip off of his face. That's how much of this fruit that he ate. Continues the Talmud. Reb Ami v'Reb Asi, hava achli, they would eat, adinatur mazaihu, until their hair would start to fall out, because there was so much grease and oil coming from them. Okay. Tells us the Talmud's not done yet. Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, hava achil, he would eat ad marid, until it made him lose his mind. It was so sweet and so overwhelming that he would eat these fruits and he would lose his sanity. And Rabbi Yochanan would tell the people of the house of the Nasi, So Rabbi Yehuda would send a group of people after him, umayti le lebeite, to bring him home. Right. So obviously, what's the Talmud trying to say here? That these fruits in those days, the fruits of Eretz Yisrael, back in the days of the Talmud, there were these fruits that they were so sweet that they were intoxicating. They were so sweet that you couldn't stop eating them. They were so sweet that it would cause oil to come from your pores, and they still couldn't stop eating. Okay, now this is the next one is the one that we're going to focus on today. Ki ata Rav Dimi, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, Amar, he said, Ir achat haitai lo liyanai hamelech behar hamelech. Now exactly what Har HaMelech is not very clear. I know this place is in Eretz Yisrael. No, it's not Har HaMoriah, it's the Har HaMelech. So exactly what it is a little bit of a debate amongst modern scholars, exactly what Har HaMelech is, but it seems to be some mountain in the cities of, in the Are Yehuda, where it's mentioned a number of times in the Talmud, as this place. So Yanai HaMelech, right, Yanai is one of the Chashmonai kings, he had a number of cities that he built on Har HaMelech, and that's probably why it was named Har HaMelech, because the king, you know, built many of his own towns there. Shoyemotzia mimena, they would pull from this place shishim ribos fale tarit, 600,000 tables of fish pieces. Tarit is pieces of fish. Lekotzetzei te'enim, to feed the people who are cutting the figs, me'erev Shabbat le'erev Shabbat, from Friday to Friday. Meaning that this place in Har HaMelech, they had workers who were chopping, who were cutting figs. That was their job, to cut the figs off the fig trees. But there were so many workers there that they needed to feed them all this fish, and so they had 600,000 buckets of or tables of fish. I mean, let's go with the simple explanation. It's referring to buckets. We're going to come back to this because this is very important. But let's go on. Ki ata Ravin, when Ravin came, Amar, he said, Ilan echad hayalo liyanei hamelech bahar hamelech, that there was one tree that Yanai HaMelech had in Har HaMelech, shoyu moridin mimenu, they would bring down from that tree, arba'im sa'a gozalot, 40 sa' of birds, mishalosh brechot bechodesh, from three different birdhouses per month. goes on the Talmud to explain, Ki ata Rabbi Yitzchak amar, and Rabbi Yitzchak came from Eretz Yisrael, he had an even more interesting anecdote to relate. He said, Ir achat haita be'Eretz Yisrael, there was a city in Eretz Yisrael, v'gufnit shema, its name was Gufnit, I don't know if there's a city today with that name, shahayu bashmonim zugot achim kohanim, there were 80 pairs of kohanim who are brothers, nesoim who are married, lishmonim zugot achayot kohanot, who were married to 80 pairs of sisters who were the daughters of kohanim. Ubadku rabbanan, so the rabbis decided to investigate this. Misura va'ad naharda, they checked from sura to naharda'a. V'lo ashkechu, and they couldn't find any kohanim, brothers who were married to kohanot sisters, bar except mi bante de Rav Chisda, except for the two daughters of Rav Chisda, they have a nesivan l'Rami Bar Chama, l'Mar Ukva Bar Chama, who were married to two brothers, Rami Bar Chama and Ukva Bar Chama. V'af agav de inhi ave kohanta, even though the girls were kohanot, inhu lo ave kohani, but the men were not. So we could not find such an example anywhere. That's the end of that. Then the Gemara goes into a discussion on back into the halachot of brachot. So this is fascinating section in the Talmud that suddenly goes into the greatness of the fruits of Eretz Yisrael and tells us these very extreme, elaborate stories about these fruits.
That basically tells us that the fruits of Eretz Israel are addicted terribly, that people can't stop eating them, and
right.
When they eat them, they become crazy.
Right, right. That's mamash what it's saying. Now, we know the Talmud tells us elsewhere that as we went into Galut, nitla tam perot, that the fruits of Eretz Israel lost their flavor. And it's interesting that it's true that, you know, you all know this, that Mark Twain, when he went to Eretz Israel in the 19th century, he went to visit the land of the Bible. Right? According to some, he's the greatest American author, not according to everyone. Apologies to Edgar Allan Poe. But according to some, Mark Twain was the greatest American author. And so his opinion apparently counted. So, you know, he goes to Eretz Yisrael, he comes back and he says,
it's a desert.
Oh, it's a dust bowl. It's a big sandbox. Like, why is everyone fighting over this? He doesn't understand. Right? If he would have come 100 years later, he would have seen a green land filled with fruits that, you know, it's interesting that very often people in Eretz Yisrael will complain that in Eretz Yisrael, it's hard to find the good fruits of Eretz Yisrael because so many of the good fruits are sent out of Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz because you can make more money selling them internationally than... Anyway, but back to here. So Rav Kook, obviously, is going to have something to say about this section of the Talmud.
When I come to Israel, the fruits has a better taste. Also the vegetables.
Yeah.
The cucumber and the needle and the tomatoes,
yeah.
You can't compare them.
Yeah.
Right? No, for sure. For sure. So obviously, since this is a section of the Talmud that's discussing the greatness of Eretz Yisrael, Rav Kook is going to have what to say on this. But it's interesting that he has a different perspective, always, always, than just the regular reading. Because when you read this, all we see is that the food is great. Says Rav Kook, he focuses on the section where the Talmud says that there was a city that Yana HaMelech had in Har HaMelech that they would bring 600,000 buckets of, we're going to go with the translation of buckets, of chopped up fish for the people who are cutting the figs. Says Rav Kook, Hehera HaMusarit, Heara HaMusarit. I want to tell you here the musar that you can learn from this story. What's the musar you can learn from this story? Hunotin makom lehitbonen. It gives us a moment to think about al derech erech hapoalim biYisrael biyotenu al artzenu. He says, when the Jewish people are living in Eretz Israel, people who are working the land of Eretz Israel are in an elevated state. Now, obviously, this is taken in many ways. For example, the pioneers is what they refer to of the establishment of the modern state. They also interpreted the process of working the land as holy.
And yeah, the Rabbi Yablonik that took my grandparents from Poland, he told them it's better to be a chaklai, a person who worked the land in Israel, than a rabbi in Warsaw.
Right. So
this was the idea.
Right. So this is what Rav Kook is trying to bring out here, and we see the way that he does it. But he's saying that the erech, the value of the Poalim in Eretz Yisrael. And he says, V'kama partza ta'arat ha-midot va'ha-chesed al-pi hadrachata shel Torat Hashem. So he says that if you do just the work without the Torah, without connecting to the Torah, you're going to be missing something very important. Now, I'm going to tell you now that we're going to have a future class coming up in 2 weeks or in 3 weeks, where we're going to talk about this from a different angle and a different perspective, where he's going to show that even if you don't have holy thoughts, just being and living in Eretz Israel itself, there's something to it. We're going to leave that for a later class. But today, he talks about the idea that if you work the land, but you don't just work the land based on yourself, but you work the land based on the approach of the Torah. So you keep the laws of the Torah. Truma and Maaser and Shemitah and all these complicated rules. So he says what happens is it doesn't just affect the land that you're living in. It also takes an effect over you and it changes you and makes you a better person. So what he's saying is, and that's what he's going to explain to us, that working the land, but working the land al-pi Torah, brings out taharat hamidot, the purity of our attributes, v'hachesed, and our kindness. So he says, shekifiteva yetzer leva adam, the natural way of people in their hearts, according to their yetzer, Yira be'enei bala bayit, it feels bad to the owner. Biyota poel ochel harbe mimasha oseh, when the worker eats too much. So if you own a restaurant and you see one of your workers takes a French fry and he eats it, that's not a problem, right? No. But if you see one of your workers is sitting there with a whole
belly.
Right? With every food on the menu, and all day long he's eating, burgers and fries and chicken and this, and so he's eating more than any customer that comes in. So as the owner of the restaurant, you would be upset. Okay, you want to eat a little bit, but eat a lot? So he says, it is the nature of a person that when you have workers, you're paying them to work. You don't want them to take extra pay by taking a lot. Amnama Torah Omra, but the Torah says that the worker comes in, V'achalta anavim kenafshecha. Right? V'chazal arunu, sh'amishpat hazeh nemar bepoel, so our sages teach us that this is referring to a worker, that the worker is allowed to eat from whatever he's working with. Ad kama nechsheva achilat hapoalim mimalachdam. So what we're saying is that it's considered the eating of the workers, being able to eat of the food that they're working with, kenafsham savam ledavar shel yosher v'tzedek, that we consider that to be morally appropriate, that the owner should want his workers to partake. Adam, and you should know that in Eretz Israel, when the people followed the laws of the Torah, it changed the owners, and they wanted their workers to eat. They wanted it.
It's very difficult.
But without a limit?
Huh?
Even without a limit?
Yeah, yeah, meaning people wanted them to eat. It became, because since in the Torah it says that you have to let the workers eat, it changed the nature where the person would say, no, if you're working for me, eat as much as you want. That's how they became generous like that. So we're saying it may be that the worker himself should be a better person and not take so much. That may be true. But we're just saying in terms of the owners, they would want, the owners of the field, they wanted people to take.
Yeah, there is in Israel a tradition, or I don't know where, if you work in the electrical company, the worker gets
free electricity.
Right.
If a bus driver used to be a member, so if you are a member of the drive, of the bus company, the whole family, the wife and the children can ride the bus.
Amazing.
Free.
Amazing. This is Mamashir. That's what Rav Kook is talking about. Yeah.
That's what
he's saying. It's this generosity that comes. And you're asking a fair question. Right? If all the employees are going to eat food all day, they'll eat the whole restaurant up, and what will there be for the customers? Right? I mean, I think that's a simple question. But the answer to that is what he's saying is that would be something that maybe that's something. And we know that the Talmud says that there are limits. But again, that's on the limits of the worker. We're not talking here about how much the worker actually eats. It's the feeling.
Yeah.
Right. So when a person owns a store, that's a great example. You own a company, so obviously, if you have a shop that sells toys, so you can't have your workers take home whatever toys they want, right? That's because then they'll take home all the best toys. That's a lot of money, right? But if there is something, a toy comes in and one of the customers, breaks the box and now you can't sell it. What are you going to do with it? Let one of the workers take it home. I mean, that's right. But some people won't. Some people won't. They'll instead take it to their neighbor or to a different friend because they can't bring themselves to pay the workers more than they're already paying them. Right? He doesn't work so well. He did. But we're saying that a generous person wants to do for their workers more and more. And he's saying that the Torah trains us how to be that way. And he says this went so far, Achlo hibit Adam al zeb ayin hara, people didn't have shafilu hatavlin, that even spices, hanachalin kedei lasot et ha'achila mutemet, why do we have spices in food? To make the food taste better. Hayagam ken nitein begalui b'shefa rav lepoalim. So he says that they would give them, not only would they give them the food, but he would put out ketchup and mustard and salt and pepper and all these other things so that when they eat, they can enjoy it.
I have guilt feeling because when we were a sophomore in 1973, our school asked, our class asked to go to Kibbutz Eilon to help them pick up bananas. And the kibbutznik said, pick up the bananas, you can eat as much as you want, but you have to put them in the bins. Yeah. So everybody put them in the bins. Then I see one of the boys, Avi Gross, take a big banana and he takes it to the bus. So I ask him, Avi, don't you know you have to put it in the bin? He said, my mother loves bananas.
Yeah.
So then I said, my family loves bananas. I took a big eshkol. And then all of us saw me. So everybody, and guess what? They didn't invite us anymore to help them.
We didn't eat.
I said, I have four brothers. I have to bring a little banana.
So that's a little bit overdoing it. But also, you weren't workers. You were volunteers helping out, right?
But he told us that we can eat bananas, but not that we can take.
And actually, that's the halakha in the Torah. In the Torah, a person can eat as much as they want, but they can't take home.
Yeah.
Right? You can't take home anything. Anything.
Anything.
Yeah. Anything,
but
right, in the Torah.
But the company, they take advantage of it. So the member that works, he gets his free electric. On top of him, on the fourth floor, a hairdresser lives, and she wants electricity to be cheaper. So she borrowed.
Right. That's always the problem. There's always an angle. There's always an angle. No, I get that. But the thing is, see, what he's saying is that if people would live al pi Torah, if they lived al pi Torah, you wouldn't have this issue, right? That's what he's saying. If people, if instead of someone saying, hey, you know, free electricity. It's not free. It's costing somebody, right? But you have to be trained to think this way. And that's what he's saying. That's what the Torah teaches you. When the Torah tells the owner, let the workers eat, so now I have a mitzvah, so then I realize it affects me and it changes me, right? Okay.
To be honest.
Yes, right. So he says, so what happens is, kikotze to the enim, these people were cutting the figs. And they're so sweet, is that because they were eating figs all day, it's so sweet, it becomes too much sweetness. So in order to take away that sweetness, the owner would provide fish, because the fish is salty, and then when you eat the fish, then you can eat more figs. So the owner was arranging and helping the people that they should be able to eat more figs by providing with them with the salty fish. He's saying that's the point of this story. The Talmud could have just said that there were Yanai had all these fig trees. Big deal. Or they look how much fish they were eating. What he's saying is no, think about the fact that these people are cutting the figs, and the figs, as we said, were so sweet, and yet he's providing them with salty food to help them eat more. They can enjoy more from eating the sweet figs. And it was given plenty, plenty. That's what
but
we
there
mean.
There is a limit how many figs you can eat.
Yeah,
right. No question, right? There's a limit to how many figs you can eat, and I don't know how with their stomach issues too, right? But the point is that the owner was providing them the food that allowed them to eat more and not get so sick of it so quickly. Now let's compare the way we arrange things in for workers in this way. Nuchal lahavin, you can start to understand yeter darkei atikun sheyenugim beyeter ma'arachot ha'poalim. He says, it's trying to give you an example of the ways that the owners of the fields would care for their workers. And you know, today we have a number of organizations, a number of companies that they found out that they have workers who work for them, and they work them hard with hours that are not appropriate, and they take people who are child labor and slave labor and these kinds of things that companies have, and I'm not picking any specific company, but where that comes from is that the owner, whoever owns the company, doesn't have the right midot. That's where it starts from. That person thinks to himself, you know, how do I make the most possible money? So if I take it to this country, and in this country I can get cheap labor and unethical ways of doing things, so then they move their factories to those places and sweatshops and all of that. So where does that come from? It starts from the top, right? That's what he's saying. That over here, you see that the owner was thinking about his workers. So that's just one example to understand of all the other ways that he would take care of his worker. Ki hakol novea mimayan echad, because it all comes from one source. Mekor harachamim v'hachesed, the source of mercy and kindness. Sheim nachla lezera Avraham avinu alav ha-shalom. Hashem did not tell Noach to go to Eretz Yisrael. He did not tell Shem or Arpachshad or any of the Avraham. Lech lecha mi'artzecha, mi'maladzecha, mi'beit avicha, el ha'aretz asher arak Hashem sends Avraham. Why? Because Eretz Yisrael is a land that's supposed to be built on chesed. And Avraham arrives in Eretz Yisrael and he does chesed and he passes this along to his descendants, that we are gomle chasadim. Right? The Talmud tells us that there are three outstanding attributes of a Jew: Baishanim, Rachmanim, and Gomle Chasadim. Right? Baishanim, we're bashful. That's a discussion for another time, what that means. Rachmanim, we're merciful. And you see this, the way we treat our enemies. If you think about the way that the enemies of Israel are treated in Israeli prisons, as opposed to the way our enemies treat our prisoners, right? The mamash yom v'layla difference, right? That's because we are rachmanim and we are gomle chasadim. Says.
But are we baishanim?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a discussion for another time.
That's the first
one. We're a bashful people. Right.
No.
We don't have time to get into it because it needs a longer discussion. But the question is an important question to ask. Yeah. Now remember, as I've said this a number of times, Rav Kook is writing this while he's still in Europe. So he says, "Ubetzedek nuchal lekavot ki midot tovot ka'ele v'chayotze bo yit'alu banu lemachbir kasher yashiv Hashem et shvutenu." So he says, I feel like I'm missing in my midot. And all the people around me are missing in their midot. Because we are not in Eretz Yisrael. And so we need the land of Eretz Yisrael and the Nachla of Avraham Avinu to build within us these midot tovot ke'ele v'chayotze bo. V'niya b'hem, and then in Eretz Yisrael, once it brings out the best in each of us, then we can be the light unto the nations. So he's saying when Yeshaya Hanavi tells us to be Le'or Goyim, it's hard for us to do that in Chutz La'aretz. You know why? Because we don't have all our light. So how can you be a light to somebody else? How can you be a sign on how to behave if we're not behaving our best because we are not in Eretz Yisrael?
It's
Baishanim, Rachmanim, and Gomle Chasadim. So he says, then when we return to Eretz Yisrael, V'niyah b'hem lo'or gayim, lo'horotam darkei Hashem, then we can show the rest of the world. V'halichot ha'chesed v'harachamim. It's a very interesting thing that, for example, I'll remind you of when there was a tragedy in Haiti. Terrible, terrible tragedy, right? There was
Israel was the first.
What did they do? They sent their doctors and mobile hospitals this. Now, the Jews couldn't do it in America, even if they had enough money to provide it. There was no system for this, and there's no government of the Jews in Chutz La'aretz to be able to send hospitals to a foreign country. But because the Jews are in Eretz Yisrael, so we have the infrastructure in the land to set up such a system where you can send out your doctors and professionals and nurses and all kinds of things and engineers to go build hospitals in Haiti for the earthquake. Right? So the reason why Israel became the symbol of this, and it's interesting that the United Nations did not come out and say we should all be like Israel. If Israel ever does something that they find offensive, right? It's like sometimes it feels like more than sometimes, like the whole United Nations is all just an anti-Israel institution, right? But what he's saying, or Rav Kook is saying, is that it's more than just the fact that when the Jews are living in Eretz Yisrael, they have the infrastructure to do it. He's saying that they also now have the midot. Because when you're living in the land which Avraham Avinu established for the Jewish people, it forces you to become a bigger Baal Chesed. It forces out of you. That's what he says. Yitalu banu lemachbir. They will come out fully when kasher yashiv Hashem et shvutenu, when Hashem will bring us back to Eretz Yisrael. So that's point number one that we're seeing from Rav Kook today. And there's really three points that he makes from this section of the Talmud. They're all related to each other. I'm not going to have time for all three today, so I'm going to do one more, and then Bezat Hashem will finish the next point next week. Point number two is that he makes. Ki ata ravin amar, the next section, again, first point was that you see from this that the generosity of the owners of the field, that they would help their workers eat more, and that shows you how Eretz Yisrael brings out the best of us. But then he's going to turn it around and say, the next story is the other direction, which is, Ravin said that there was a tree that Yanayad in Har HaMelech, where they would bring down 40 saw of birds from the three birdhouses every month. The Talmud is not just telling you factoids. It's not just telling you charts and graphs of information, statistics. So what's the point of that? That there were all these birds in the tree? He says, Ha'ara gedola mizeh b'inyan yishuv Eretz Yisrael. He says, Rav Kook always understands the depth here, that this is teaching us a new concept in yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Shira'ui lehishtadel b'chol darkei hakalkala v'shechulam b'chlal mitzvas yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Is that it is important that we bring out in Eretz Yisrael every element of comfort and every resource that's available in the world. We have to bring it into Eretz Yisrael, and that's part of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. For example, if there are new toilets that work better, picking a silly example.
In America?
Anywhere. If someone would invent that, to bring that into Eretz Yisrael is the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. If there's, you know, some new way of making trees grow better, for sure, right? Right? But even if it's a side point, he says, Shegam bedvarim hatfelim la'avodat ha'adama, even things that are secondary to working the land. Kmo gidul yonim, raising doves. Gamken efshar sheyishlach Hashem bracha gedola, Hashem will send the bracha if you bring that industry into Eretz Yisrael. And it's amazing that Eretz Yisrael, 100 years ago, oh, let's make it less, 70 years ago, you would have said is an agricultural society. And the bracha, right, the bracha that existed in that agricultural society was exceptional. Right? The lands were green that hadn't been green in 1,000 years. And the fruits that grow were exceptional fruits. And the Jews who were working it worked with dedication. I don't have to tell everyone the stories of the pioneers of the agricultural. Suddenly, Eretz Yisrael changed. It's no longer an agricultural-based country.
So he's responsible for the... Competition between the Israelis.
Yeah.
When somebody buys a house, the other one has to buy a bigger house.
Well, that he's not saying that. But what he's saying is that what would you say now is the leading industries in Eretz Israel?
High
tech. Tech, basically, right? Yeah. Tech, the medical fields. Yeah. Says Rav Kook.
But also agriculture. Israel teaches how to grow vegetables.
But that's the engineering, right? It's the engineering, yeah. Right? But I'm saying even more than that. You see, in the land, for sure you're going to have bracha. But what Rav Kook is saying is that any industry you bring into Eretz Israel is going to have bracha. So the advancements in the medical fields that the state of Israel has made, Rav Kook is already saying that that's what's going to happen. He's saying it's not just food, it's not just the land, but gam bedvarim atfelim lavodat adama, right? Even things kol darkei akalkala, whatever you need to be sustained. If Israel goes into medicine, they will be the top in medicine. If they go into tech, they'll be the top in tech. Whatever they go into, there will be bracha. V'gam mizeh yimtzu rabim chayat yadam, and many people will be sustained. The economy will receive the blessing in whatever you bring into Eretz Yisrael, not just the Avodat HaAdamah. B'chavod. Right, that's what he's saying. This is before they even dreamed that there would be. But how does he know this? From the Talmud. That's what he's saying. The Talmud is telling you that it's not just the fruits, but the birds. If you start raising birds, you will find bracha there. Says Rav Kook, I get it. The Talmud is not just telling me about statistics of birds. The Talmud is teaching me that Eretz Yisrael comes with its own blessing in whatever industry you get into. Alkein, yelanu lemashal, haderech hamefo'ar v'ribui habracha shnitbarcha haaretz b'gidul ayonim. Right? It's a mashal. Shuhu anaf. Tafal v'raza b'yishuva shel Eretz Yisrael. It is a minor branch in the establishment of the land of Eretz Yisrael, meaning that the raising of birds is not an agricultural element within society. The raising of birds is secondary. Umimena nilmad ledorot. And what the Talmud is trying to teach you is to derive from this to future generations. Bechol si'ifei hamichya. In every branch of the economy, of sustaining ourselves. Lechoz bahem, make it work. Ubirchat Hashem tiyeh gam alehem.
That's what he wrote in what year?
19? So we're assuming he's writing this in the tens, the 20s, the 30s. But he's saying that whatever Eretz Yisrael chooses to make into the industry, they will find bracha.
Succeed.
Right. Kol hu, and the reason is bechlal mitzvat yishuv Eretz Yisrael hachaviva ma'od. It's because the mitzvah is to populate and establish and get the Jews to live in Eretz Yisrael. So if you want to do it by planting oranges and apples, it'll work if you plant oranges and apples. If you decide that you're going to become the producers of pharmaceutical products, computer parts, defense, weapons, and all this kind of stuff, whatever you get into. There's a bracha, sometimes we think that it's the Jews who are so brilliant and that's why it works out. But he's saying it's the land that's creating the bracha. Because when you are trying to create a yeshuv in Eretz Yisrael that is chaviva ma'od, it's a mitzvah that's chaviva ma'od, it's very dear, and that's why it brings blessing. Shehu yesod l'chal ha'osher ha'tachliti, he says, and when you do a mitzvah, that's the secret to great success. He goes on to a third point, which we're going to leave for next time, which is the story of the brothers and the brothers Kohanim marrying sisters, what all that is about. We'll leave that for next week. But I want to reiterate a point that I don't know if I can make this point well enough, but I'm going to try. Is that what Rav Kook is doing here? Obviously, the ideas themselves are amazing. But he's taking a line in the Talmud that most people read and move on. Yeah, Yane HaMelech had, he had 600,000 buckets of tuna fish. They had so much tuna salad for the people eating figs. Wow, Eretz Yisrael was so green, right? It was so green. It had so much fruits that they needed this much fish. And then we move on. Okay, we know this. Eretz Yisrael was so great. And then the Talmud tells us all these birds. We say, oh, again, what a compliment to Eretz Yisrael. But Rav Kook understands that the Talmud isn't just telling you that. So he digs deeper and he pulls out what we've seen so far is two of these gems. The first gem is the concept that Eretz Yisrael makes us better people. Right? That's what it does. And so the putting out of the tuna fish salad that the owner put out for his workers so that they can eat more figs is a sign of just the generosity that comes. And you can see this today. And what he's saying is that when you are in Chutz La'aretz, you are midot. Are not as good as when you are in Eretz Yisrael. It will bring out your midot in a better way. That's point number one.
I believe that.
Right? But point number two is is that the when he sees the success of the birds, he says, one second, we were talking about fruits. Why does the Talmud suddenly talk about birds? So we would say, well, it's just showing you the success of the economy, a thriving economy, because when you have a lot of food, you're going to have a lot of birds. So the cook, no, that's not what the Talmud is trying to tell you. Okay, these are not statistics. What it's telling you is that there is part of the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael includes birds. Even though birds are not part of the Avodat Adama, the answer is every aspect of the economy that leads to the Yishuv of Eretz Yisrael, that allows more people to live there. So if you have a flourishing, booming economy in Eretz Yisrael, that's going to allow more Jews to live there, to increase the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael. He says that's part of the bracha that comes. And so Hashem, that's what he says, it's the land, Hashem Doresh Ota, God is watching over the land. And so because of that, there's going to be bracha in every aspect of the economy, as which is going to lead to the Osher, to the Osher is with an Aleph, but the Osher with an Ayin too. But what's interesting is that the first explanation is telling us that it's going to make us better and more generous when we connect to the land, and the second is that when we connect to the land, it makes God, so to speak, more generous. So we will become better people and we will be more giving. And then he's saying, but also when we're living in the land and connecting to the land, then Hashem will be more giving. So it creates this relationship of success that brings with it bracha. And so we're going to leave it here. But this is the idea here. Again, these sections of the Talmud to realize what Rav Kook is trying to say before he's even in Eretz Yisrael. He's encouraging everyone that they have to go to Eretz Yisrael to establish the Yishuv, because you can't be Le'or Goyim until you are where you need to be. And you can't receive the brachot unless you are involved in the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So all of this is an encouragement for the Jews to continue to establish the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael, which at that time was obviously not what it is today. But we can see that the words that he's foretelling, they mamash come true, word for word. So we should also be zochet to the brachot and the Rav Shefa and the midot tovot that comes with these mitzvot. Right, thank you.